Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620 KPOJ.
The iHeartRadio app on your iPhone. Download it for free at iHeartRadio.com. We think you'll heart it a lot.
You're tuned to AM 620 KPOJ.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, and so much in the news. Bernie Sanders will be with us in just a moment. We're waiting for our connection with him to clear up and be established. George Bush's last year by the numbers, great summary over at thinkprogress.com. Number of U.S. troops killed in Iraq, over 4,000, 4,200 I believe it is now. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, our first hour Friday. By the way, we're live today. It's the day after New Year's. And if you're listening, this is not a best of, as yesterday was. We are live, 866-303-2270, our telephone number, tomhartman.com for our live chat room. We'll have our video stream up and working during the next break, a quarter after the hour. And Senator Bernie Sanders with us, the independent from Vermont, for our national town hall. I think of Bernie as America's senator. Bernie, welcome to the show.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you, Bernie.
And Happy New Year to all of the listeners.
Amen. And to you too, Bernie.
Thanks.
And Bernie's website, by the way, sanders.senate.gov. He's got a great newsletter. I got a copy of it yesterday, the day before, somebody in your office was working on New Year's. So, Bernie, what's on your mind? What's up these days?
Well, Tom, I think it would be a good exercise this morning to talk about what Congress will be working on when it reconvenes early next week. I don't have to tell the listeners that this is a pivotal moment in American history. We are ending 8 years of perhaps the worst presidency in American history, if not at least in modern history. We've got a new president. I think we have momentum to move this country in a very, very different direction. Let me just touch on some of the issues, some of the problems that I see that we should be focusing on, not just in the White House and Congress, but in discussions with the American people, because ultimately nothing happens, in my view, unless there is a strong, focused grassroots movement in this country, which is desperately needed to take on the big money interest in Washington. So number one, obviously, we're looking at the most serious economic problems we have faced in many, many decades. As we speak, people are losing their jobs, their wages are going down, they're losing their health care, they're losing their homes, they're losing their pensions. Poverty is increasing. Many of the elderly are falling through the cracks, and we've got to address those issues. Second of all, clearly we have got to get at the root of the financial collapse. To my mind, we must absolutely hold accountable those extraordinarily greedy, reckless, irresponsible tycoons on Wall Street, the so-called masters of the universe who have taken us off an economic cliff. They cannot simply walk away with hundreds of millions of dollars and continue to have their position in society as a group of great leaders. They're not great leaders. And we must, I think, Tom, in a very fundamental sense, even beyond legislation, is deal with this culture of greed. You know, for years now on the covers of big magazines, we've seen all these billionaires. These are the great heroes of America. I think it's time to rethink that. The baseball players who make, $50 million a year, et cetera. I think we need to rediscover a set of values which says that those teachers and nurses and doctors and police officers and small business people creating new jobs, maybe they're the heroes of our country and not just billionaires. But that's a long story. I think in the midst of all of the economic problems, we can't forget that intricately related to those problems is the health care crisis, which is not only 47 million people without health insurance, it is that the cost of health care continues to soar, that many businesses now are spending an enormous amount of money on health care rather than investing in what they are supposed to be doing. We can't forget the crisis in global warming, and the question that we have to deal with, which we'll be dealing with very shortly in Washington, is how you address global warming in such a way that we can, in fact, turn it into an economic opportunity by creating millions of good-paying jobs in terms of energy efficiency, moving to wind, solar, geothermal, biomass, and other new forms of sustainable energy. I personally believe there's huge potential out there to create new jobs, create a new type of economy. Now, what you're going to be seeing in the next couple of weeks is the following. There will be work being done right now, and it will accelerate in the next few weeks, so that when President Obama takes the oath of office, very shortly after that, we will be ready with a major economic recovery program, which will be more significant than any time since the Great Depression. What we'll be talking about, I'm guessing, is somewhere about $400 billion a year for the next 2 years. Included in that stimulus package will be substantial sums of money to rebuild our infrastructure, which is in many ways collapsing in terms of roads, bridges, culverts, water plants, wastewater plants, schools. What we'll also be putting money into is energy efficiency and sustainable energy. It's not clear exactly how that's going to be playing out, what the details are, but in general, those are areas we'll be looking at. We'll be looking at ways to help states. Right now, in most states in this country, they're looking at very significant deficits. In the state of Vermont, they're looking at cutting back on programs that help the weakest and most vulnerable people. That's true all over this country. How do we help the states? And how do we help the most vulnerable people? So that will also be included in the stimulus package. The goal there is to protect the most vulnerable and at the same time create as many jobs as we possibly can in the short term so that the economic condition does not deteriorate and we find ourselves in a depression. Because once you are in a depression, once the system starts breaking down, it will be an extraordinarily painful process and an extraordinarily expensive process to dig us out of that hole. So I think the immediate issue is how do we keep falling into a depression?
Many of us, Murray, think that we're already there, or that we're
be there, but believe me, it could become a lot worse.
Yeah.
In terms of Wall Street, we cannot. It's not just holding those people accountable. It's not even just re-regulating and doing away with all of the deregulation that we have seen so that right now you have trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars floating out there in these exotic financial instruments that nobody understands. It has to do, Tom, and I know you have been very, very strong on this issue, on this whole issue of too big to fail and these gigantic institutions which exist, which must be bailed out in the midst of an economic crisis. How do we start breaking them up right now? Why do we have to wait for Bank of America to fail in 5 years? Why don't we begin saying, I'm sorry, you're too big to exist. Why don't we bring back real competition, not only in the financial industry, but in many other industries as well? I think, again, in terms of health care, it has to be seen as part of the economic crisis. And the goal there is, in my view, to understand that the insurance companies and the drug companies have played a horrendous role in distorting priorities in healthcare. Obviously, their goal is simply to make as much money as they possibly can. How do we create a healthcare system which does what other industrialized countries do, guarantee healthcare to all people, do it in the most cost-effective way, provide the highest quality that we can? One of the areas that I personally will be focusing on, in addition to fighting for a national healthcare program, is the crisis in primary healthcare. We don't talk about it enough. Over 50 million Americans, including many with health insurance today, can't find a doctor, can't find a dentist. We are not training enough doctors to go into medically underserved areas, enough dentists, enough nurses. So we need to be training those people, getting them out into the areas, urban areas, rural areas, where we need them. And when you do that, it pays for itself many times over, because if you keep people from going into an emergency room, going into a hospital because they haven't been treated when they should have been treated, you end up saving substantial sums of money. Mm-hmm. Last point I want to make, and this will not happen tomorrow, but it has to always be there, is campaign finance reform. Mm-hmm. Until we understand how much power the insurance companies, the drug companies, the coal companies, the big oil companies, the military-industrial complex, and all these guys have, and their lobbying capabilities, until we understand that, we're really not going to be able to transform America in the way we want. So those are some of the issues that are out there, some of my views as to how we should be moving forward in the very near future.
I think that's a great summary and a very, very solid one, Bertie. I'm curious your thoughts very quickly on Roland Burris, his being seated by the Senate.
It ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
And it shouldn't happen. This is no comment on Mr. Burris. It is a comment on the governor. And I think it was made very clear to him that any nominee he brought forward would be highly tainted.
Yeah. So he's just trying to set up his own defense in his lawsuit, I guess.
I think so.
Yeah. It's sad. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Brunch with Bernie. Bernie will be taking your calls, 866-303-2270. I see our board is already totally lit up. Right after this break, we are live the day after New Year's here on Friday. It's 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoy Hannity. Listen to Hartman. Tom Hartman, nationwide. AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Hey, it's Tom Hartman. Guys, I know how easy it is to get wrapped up in everyday life. You just flat out ignore your health. I hate to point out the obvious, but sometimes we need to be reminded that without our health, life as we know it becomes extremely difficult. Let me take a few seconds to talk about prostate health and how this small gland can lead to big problems if you ignore it. The classic signs of an unhealthy prostate include the following: difficulty urinating, frequent night bathroom trips, and even sexual dysfunction. Unfortunately, every man will have some sort of prostate-related health issue if he lives long enough. And we all should, right? You should visit your doctor for regular checkups and take Beta Prostate to support proper prostate function. Ignoring your prostate will not make your problems go away. Beta Prostate provides effective, all-natural support. Call and order Beta Prostate risk-free today. Dial 1-800-954-0803. Your satisfaction is guaranteed or your money back. Dial 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803.
Are you waking up with Carl Wolfson and friends?
These are less popular suggestions. Abraham Lincoln.
6 to 9.
The Obama's first dog, what name it could be.
Promise, because he promised the girls and he promised us.
Elephant eater. How about lipstick?
How about rogue?
You've got to have southpaw. I'd like to give it a local name and name it Mutt Safino, the weather dog.
It's Carl Wolfson.
As Abraham Lincoln said.
Morning, 6 to 9.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Portland's only progressive talk station.
A wise man once said, get knowledge of the spine, for this is the requisite for many diseases. That was Hippocrates back in 446 BC. I take care of my spine by going to Relax the Back. Relax the Back's furniture not only looks good, but actually improves your spinal health. Relax the Back has certified ergonomic assessment specialists on staff to assist you in choosing ergonomic chairs, recliners, pillows, mattresses, sleep aids, desks, footrests, whatever you need. Louise likes the Sanyo massage chair, and I get a kick out of the zero-gravity recliners and inversion tables. Hanging upside down never felt so good.
Relax the Back, located in Beaverton and Clackamas.
At a time when Portland homeowners need it the most, mortgage rates have just taken an abrupt nosedive to a 50-year low. So if you've been patiently waiting for that perfect time to refinance, pull the trigger today and lock in rates as low as, are you ready? 5% flat with an APR of 5.25. I'm Hayes Barnard, owner of Paramount Equity, and this dream rate can vanish in the blink of an eye. So be decisive and grab the phone right now. We all know this financial crisis will end. And when it does, you'll be so glad you locked in that 5% rate with an APR of 5.25. Listen, when others can't help, Paramount Equity is still committed to saving our neighbors money with zero out-of-pocket expenses. So call 718-1000 today. And when you like it, lock it. 503-718-1000.
Paramount Equity, lending with expertise. Paramount Equity Mortgage.
License number ML3256.
Who do you ping for? Your mother? Sister? Grandmother? Daughter? Friend? Whether you're a survivor or co-survivor of cancer, we all ping for someone. Now you can ping with us 24/7 and support life-saving research at City of Hope. With new approaches like immunotherapy that use the body's own immune system to fight cancer and the development of four of the leading cancer drugs, City of Hope is helping save lives everywhere, every day. Learn more at whodoyoupinkfor.com.
Sure, you can incorporate a business, make a will, file a trademark on LegalZoom.com. You don't need to spend thousands of dollars, and yes, it's fast. But what about quality? The Wall Street Journal tested LegalZoom. They created a last will and testament and then had it reviewed by a law school professor who declared it airtight. LegalZoom isn't a law firm. They provide self-help services at your specific direction. And for even more savings on most products, enter Brilliant in the referral box at checkout. Visit LegalZoom.com. That's LegalZoom.com.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Our quote for the day from Thomas Jefferson. When a man assumes a public trust, he should consider himself a public property. Our program, by the way, brought to you in part by the Teamsters, proud supporters of the Employee Free Choice Act. Go to Teamster.org for more information. And speaking of public trusts and public property, Senator Bernie Sanders, one of the greatest public servants in the country, on the line with us. Bernie, you were voted by The Nation magazine the most important progressive legislator of 2008. Did you see that?
I did.
Yeah. Very, very congratulations. Kind of you deserve it. You absolutely deserve it. You have committed your life to service of the public, and you do such a fine job. I don't go on.
You're making me nervous when you go on.
I was just going to say, there's only three other politicians I know who are willing to come on the air and take callers' questions. And Peter DeFazio and Brian Beard and the other ones only occasionally. So I'm just really impressed. You're wonderful. Okay, enough of this. David in Northampton, Massachusetts. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
See, Tom, you're sounding like a senator with all of these praises. So
yeah, okay,
let's get to work here.
I'll stop it. You got it. Okay.
All right, David, what do you got?
Well, sir, thank you very much. This really is a pleasure to be speaking to you. I hold you up there with the founding fathers. I appreciate the work that you're doing. The thing that I've noticed that seems to be going on, and I'm basing this on conversations with my Depression-era grandparents, is that we seem to be going through these cycles of feast and famine. You know, when we hit the bad times and we pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and straighten out our economy and our politics, then we go into a phase of complacency. And then we hit another crash. And the thing that I'm not hearing from a lot of people is that we're not teaching the average citizen the role and rules of government and how citizens in a democracy are supposed to participate. And I think if more people were aware of how the Constitution works, why it was put in place, what it's based on historically, I could envision some kind of mandatory, stringent testing for all school-age children to be aware, because if you compare other nations, you know, our neighbors up to the north, you know, when a prime minister, for instance, makes a mistake, they call an election and they change the rule. What is your opinion on such an idea of some kind of mandatory testing so people are more aware of what their rights are? Because, you know, it seems to me that a lot of people don't know what their rights are,
well,
what their roles are,
and these
people get away with what they get away with.
I think you raise a very profound point. Poll after poll and study after study shows that the American people do not understand the Constitution. And in my view, the media does a very, very poor job. In fact, one of the reasons I like doing this show is to discuss a little bit with people what is going on in Washington. And I think that happens it just does not happen enough, and people don't know what's going on. I do a program with kids in the state of Vermont where we talk simultaneously to about 8 high schools around the state just explaining what's going on. So your point is exactly right. Whether it should be mandatory or not, I don't know. But this is what I do know. Number one, we have to do a heck of a lot better in terms of what used to be called civics when I was in elementary school, explaining to young people what a democracy is about, what their roles and responsibilities are, what an extraordinary document our Constitution is. And I think if people understood that, and if they understood that it is their job as citizens to be actively involved in the political process, I think we could make profound changes in this country. I think we should be embarrassed that when many of our kids, high school, college kids, go to Europe, they end up learning more about American politics in Europe than they heard back here in the United States. So, David, I don't know if we have to make it mandatory, but I think in schools throughout this country, and we're thinking about this issue, how do you encourage civics? How do you encourage political participation is a huge issue. And you're absolutely right about that.
Bernie, apropos of that and the fact that the George Bush still has a 24% approval rating, I saw in one of the newspapers last week, 17% of Americans cannot identify the United States of America on a world map.
Yeah. Well, there it goes. And then you ask questions, when was the Civil War fought? When was the Korean War fought? And a lot of people just don't know that. And then you read the Declaration of Independence, and a significant number of people think it's a Communist Party doctrine or something.
Yeah, absolutely. Anthony in Seattle. Anthony, we just have a little less than a minute here before the
break.
Okay,
Senator Sanders, basically, President Bush had declared the day after Christmas, the 26th, as a federal holiday. He has not said anything about January the 20th, Inauguration Day. Neither my senators nor my elected representatives know whether or not that day will be a federal holiday either. I called the White House switchboard. They said, well, he's only the president until 12 noon, so it's up to Obama to declare it a federal holiday. So what's the deal with January the 20th?
To the best of my knowledge, it is not a federal holiday, but I don't know any more than you do, but that's my impression it is
yeah.
not.
It would be nice. What would be important
it would be
as a federal holiday is Election Day.
Well, that's a whole other issue we can talk about, and that is vacation time and holidays in the United States and the overworked American.
Yeah, amen. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour, our national town hall here on the Tom Hartman Program. We're live the day January 2nd, the day after New Year's Day, 2009. Wow, here we are. Sanders.Senate.gov, TomHartman.com, AirAmerica.com. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2217.
Truth is his weapon. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
The hour, Tom Hartman here with you, the Tom Hartman radio program, Brunch with Bernie. It is Friday with Senator Bernie Sanders, the independent senator from Vermont, taking your calls. Bernie, was there something to wrap up from the last segment?
Anthony of Seattle raised the question about holidays, and we're going to request, actually, from CRS, the Congressional Research Service, a study trying to compare the amount of holidays that we have as American workers with people around the world. And I think what the results will show is that our people are working a lot more hours under a lot more stress with a lot less time off for their families than virtually every other country on earth. So that's an important issue that we should continue to discuss, Tom.
Yeah, indeed. And it goes hand in hand with the decimation of the middle class in America.
Absolutely.
And the enrichment of the super rich and the transnational corporations.
You know, there are some jobs being offered out there that don't include any vacation time at all.
Yeah, many, far too many. Jim in Farmington Hills, Michigan, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Morning, folks. I mean, afternoon. It's it's an honor to be on again. Tom, we've talked before. I'm a county commissioner from Michigan. Mm-hmm. And basically, we've been hit by reduced revenues. We've been hit by dramatically cut federal grant programs and other programs. And I personally have tremendous respect for you, Senator. And you know, you've been a model for me in my political career. I'm a Democrat, and you know, from my side, I have nothing but admiration for you. I would like you to kind of commit to supporting this legislation, having a large, significant funding come to local governments for our improvements that we need in our local infrastructure, because we can guide the money better than the feds. And a perfect example is the Energy Efficiency Block Grant Program that was passed 2 years ago now, and we still haven't funded it. And I'd love to see that funded.
Well, I helped right, Jim, thanks very much for what you're doing. And as a former mayor, I do understand what you're talking about. And I think that certainly must be one of the goals. What Jim is saying is, don't just get the money to the states, get the money to the cities, get the money to the towns. And he's absolutely right. We wrote and passed and now are fighting for the funding within the stimulus package, Jim, what we call an environmental block grant, which will do exactly what you're talking about. It will get block grants out to cities, towns, and states so that we can move forward on energy efficiency and sustainable energy, because the truth of the matter is cities and towns all over this country have been leading certainly the federal government and many states in moving in that direction. So you're absolutely right. There are many, many infrastructure projects that local communities need, and we have got to be mindful of that. So, yes, Jim, I am very supportive of that approach.
Priscilla in Wisconsin, you're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hello. I'd like to talk a little bit about how we as Americans have been put on a stranglehold of fear, especially over the past several years, and we have been operating that way. And I'd like to reflect back to during the Depression time when the great thinker Napoleon Hill actually wrote the words for FDR when he said, we have nothing to fear but fear itself. And today, how can we apply that mindset to ourselves and go back to being the home of the brave? Thank you.
Thank you, Priscilla. And that's a very important thought. I think we cannot underestimate the damage done to this country over the last 8 years by folks like Bush and Cheney, who have not only made us fearful in so many respects, but they have made it very, very hard for people to be hopeful and to be excited about the potential that exists in this country. One of the great aspects of Barack Obama's campaign was the degree to which he instilled a sense of hope in people, and in which he brought millions and millions of young people and others into the political process. And I hope very much that we'll build on that enthusiasm, that hope, that momentum. Because in my view, Tom, and I'm not here just to toss out rhetoric, we can bring about remarkable changes in this country. I mean, there is no reason why we can't not only have a national health care program guaranteeing health care to all people, but why we can't get more doctors and nurses and dentists into our rural areas. There is no reason why we can't begin to create a new presence for the United States in the whole world community. It is astounding to me that in the conflict right now in the Middle East, terrible conflict that's going on, what country was attempting to create a ceasefire? Was it the United States of America? It was France. Where is the most powerful nation on earth inspiring people all over the world, not just in the Middle East?
Well, Bush is on vacation.
Yeah,
you know, you have to understand. He doesn't want to interrupt.
I know, he doesn't want to disturb his vacation. Bottom line is, if we begin changing our national priorities so we're not spending $540 billion a year on the military, much of which is not needed, if we're not being engaged in wars all over the world, certainly Iraq we should not have been in the first place. If we're asking our young people not simply to make as much money as they can, but to go out and work in their communities helping people who need help, if we create the greatest education system that we can, if we pay attention to the needs of our teachers, there are extraordinary things that we can do and create a kind of nation that we have not seen for a long, long time. So I am not unoptimistic. We have the wealth to do that. We have the intelligence to do that. We have the energy to do that. What we have certainly been lacking for a long time is leadership, and I hope we're going to be having that in the near future.
Sean in Vancouver, Washington. You're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Senator Sanders, it has become something of a sick parlor game in which people sit around and make jokes about the intelligence of the average American in terms of geography and history and so forth. But in effect, what's happened over this 30-year conservative dark age is that, you know, when people try to organize a union, the boss can just fire them. I would say that if President Obama is going to spend his political capital at all, I think the single most important thing he could do, even over and above a Green New Deal, would be to re-enfranchise people. You know, people, if they could imagine a world if someone talked about a union at Walmart and the manager who fired them went to prison. Imagine a world like that, empowering the working class. We would have 100 Green New Deals if we would just harness the self-interest of the poor and the working class of this country.
You're talking about the Employee Free Choice Act here, Sean.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well,
and the elimination of these so-called right-to-work states. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Roll back Taft-Hartley.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What Sean is saying is enormously important, and he's right on. Obviously, the Employee Free Choice Act is enormously important because we have millions of Americans today who want to be part of a union, who want to engage in collective bargaining, but literally can't do it right now because the deck is stacked against them. And strengthening the labor movement is not only important for people in organized labor, it's important for every American because we have to turn around this race to the bottom. We've got to start a race to the top. And if organized labor is making a good wage and you're not in a union, you will be making a better wage because your employer has got to provide you with wages to compete with other people in your community. But Sean's point goes deeper than that, and he talks about what happens if we empower people. I'll give you an example, Sean, of something that we're working on. I happen to believe very much that we should take a hard look at worker ownership. In Vermont and many Ohio, other states, we're seeing some movement toward employee ownership of the places that they are working in, where workers are sitting around making the decisions for their companies. They're excited about coming to work. They feel part of the process. But all of this has everything to do with empowering the American people in a dozen different ways in the political process, in the economic process, on the job. And that certainly, obviously, is a major priority of where we have to go as a nation.
Mm, yeah, well said. Let's see. Rama in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Rama. You're on with Bernie. We got a minute to the break.
Good morning, gentlemen. I just wanted to say, when are war crimes tribunals going to happen? When is accountability? This man and his administration have gotten away with murder. I mean, where are the war crimes tribunals? 9/11. I mean, every year, every minute that goes by, these guys are committing war crimes right now, genocide.
Bernie?
Well, I think there will be. I don't think it's going to be the first thing on the agenda. I think we're going to have to deal with the economy and a dozen other issues. But I think fully investigating the role that George Bush and his administration have played in so many areas where they have perhaps broken the law or acted in an unconstitutional manner is something that Congress has got to look at, too.
Yeah, the thing that blows my mind is that they're taking credit for there not having been a strike since 9/11, and the corollary to that is they should take credit for having ignored all the intelligence that led up to 9/11. But
right.
That's a whole other thing. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, Brunch with Bernie, taking your calls at 866-303-2270. We're live here on Friday, the day after New Year's Day, the second day of 2009. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Blindingly logical. Tom Hartman, nationwide, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
Hi, Tom Hartman here. Now, I want to talk to you about gold. Gold is real money, and it's been real money for over 5,000 years. Yes, there will be fluctuations in the price of gold, but gold will still be real money when the dollar is just a footnote in history. That's why I began buying gold years ago, and now I acquire gold and silver coins through ITM Trading. You can call ITM, too, at 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. There may be rumors of a strong dollar policy or rallies that send the dollar higher for a short time, but in my humble opinion, the long-term future for the dollar is very uncertain. That's why some nations don't even want U.S. dollars today. That's why I'm buying gold for the long term. So call my friends at ITM Trading and talk to their experts. They'll answer your questions and send you a free information packet about owning gold to get you started. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. That's 1-888-OWN-GOLD. It's really very simple. Just talk to the experts at ITM Trading. Call 1-888-OWN-GOLD. 1-888-OWN-GOLD.
Ed Schultz.
Is this the man?
No, this is the man talking to the man. Ed Schultz, what's going on?
Noon to 3.
Barack Obama with us. I know you voted for the farm bill. Can you speak to the folks in the heartland on ag and energy?
I come from the heartland, and I come from an agricultural state. My record goes back 10 years.
The Ed Schultz Show.
What I'm most concerned about are family farmers and family ranchers.
Noon to 3.
We've got to make sure that they're getting help, not just big agribusiness.
AM 620 KPOJ. Online at 620KPOJ.com.
Inside this truck are some very special batteries, because these batteries are going to the Mattel Children's Hospital, UCLA, where they know that making kids better takes all kinds of technologically advanced equipment and quite a few Hot Wheels and Barbies and Polly Pockets. So to power all those toys, the people at Duracell pack that truck full of batteries, because they know nothing's better than powering a smile. Duracell, trusted everywhere.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Wait a minute. No, she didn't just jump me in line. It is way too early. excuse me. excuse me. But I know you saw me standing here. Girl, you are lucky I had a sweet McGriddles and orange juice this morning. Because if I hadn't, whoo, it'd be on.
Start your mornings off on the right track with breakfast from McDonald's. A Southern-style chicken biscuit or McGriddle sandwich is enough to put anyone in a good mood and set a positive tone for your day.
Every year, Sleep Country sells literally thousands of new mattresses from the best brands. And every year, mattress factories change their models. So Sleep Country has to clear out hundreds of last year's mattresses. Sleep Country's huge year-end clearance sale is on now. Save on selected Simmons, Sealy, Tempur-Pedic, and the Sleep Number bed. These are brand new mattresses. They're just last year's models. Get year-end clearance savings on adjustable beds, futons, even the Sleep Number bed by Select Comfort. And don't miss closeout savings on floor samples, demonstrators, freight damage, scratched and scuffed, and customer returns. Last year's mattresses mean this year's savings. Sleep Country's huge year-end clearance sale is on now. Guaranteed comfort, best selection, lowest price.
Sleep Country.
It's easy to purchase a new mattress at Sleep Country with no down, no payments, and no interest for 12 months on selected mattress sets. Plus, for a limited time, buy now to save now on 2008 Tempur-Pedic mattress models.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Tom Hartman here with you, 866-303-2270, the telephone number here on the True People's Radio program. Senator Bernie Sanders with us with this Brunch with Bernie hour. And let's see here, Mel in Kirkland, Washington. You're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Bernie. My question is,
If Congress passes the universal health care, how long will it take to get into effect, like the other countries in Europe?
How long will it take to implement the program?
Right.
That's a good question. I can't give you an exact answer, but I think it could happen a lot quicker than people think, Mel. One of the areas that we're working on right now is not only fighting for a national health care program, so we end the absurdity of 47 million people not having any health insurance at all, but we're, as I mentioned earlier, fighting to change our primary health care system and open up thousands of new clinics in every underserved region of the country so that every American will have access to a doctor or a dentist at a sliding scale or for less than that. The bottom line right now is that our healthcare system is wasteful, it is bureaucratic, it is heavily influenced by the profiteering of the insurance companies and the drug companies, and we need to stand up to them and move toward a national healthcare system and implement it as quickly as we possibly can.
Jermaine in Washington, D.C., you're on with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Senator Sanders, how's it going today?
Good.
I want to see if I could ask you a political question. I'm trying to see why it is that our caucus is blocking Roland Burris' seat. I think it's bad politically and it's bad legally. Politically, we need both senators from Illinois. We've got tough legislation coming up, and it'll put this thing to bed instead of letting it drag out through courts. And legally, we have no leg to stand on. Blagojevich isn't indicted. He's not impeached. Can't see how they can impeach him since he's not indicted. Roland's clean. I couldn't see that he would, if he's clean of these sort of activities, selling the seat or what have you, then I can't see him nominating someone like that. So why?
Well, Jermaine,
seat the senator. Why not just seat him?
Okay, I'll tell you why. I mean, this has nothing to do with Mr. Burris, Jermaine. I don't think anyone is arguing against him. This has everything to do with Blagojevich. I always mispronounce his name.
Blagojevich. Just think Blagojevich. Of the goy.
That's right. Blagojevich. And what he has apparently done, he has so tainted that office of governor of Illinois that almost anything that he does is, in fact, going to be looked at askance. And I think what the Democratic leadership appropriately did said, don't do this. Don't appoint somebody right now. In fact, what you should be doing is thinking about resigning and developing, having somebody else appoint the next senator from Illinois. And I think that makes sense. What really angers me so much about what the governor there has done is throughout this afternoon, we have been talking about involving people in the political process. And when you have somebody doing what he has done, it just so taints, it just makes the political process look so ugly. And just sends a message out to so many people. Why do I want to be involved in this kind of thing? Mm. And you know, that is just a very sad note to send, especially to the young people.
Yeah, I guess on the not convicted. I mean, my position on this has been that, you know, he's legally the governor. The governor has to appoint the senator. You know, he should do it, and they should seat him. But I absolutely understand your point of view. Elliot Spitzer was not convicted. I'm not even sure he was indicted. He might have been. Well, whatever. But, you know, he did what arguably is the right thing and said, okay, that's it. You know, I'm not fit for public office, and so I'm stepping down. Blagojevich should have done the same, and then Pat Quinn would have been the governor, and he could have appointed somebody. But the risk is that there'd be an election, and right now Democrats are as popular in Illinois as Richard Nixon was after, you know. So this could be, but anyway, we'll see where it all goes. Larry in Dallas. Hey, Larry, what's up? Larry?
Yes, in Dallas?
Yeah, you're on the air.
Thank you. Hello, Senator Bernie. Thank you for being on the program, and I'm a great respecter and appreciator for much of your work. I have a question. It's not a softball. It takes a little framing. I'll try to do it quickly. I'm sure I can do it in under a minute. We claim to be a nation of laws and like to think of ourselves as such. A nation of laws that doesn't enforce those laws is wink, nudge, only pretending to be a nation of laws. When you had your family member, not you specifically, generically speaking, when someone's family member is murdered and they go to the police don't say, that was yesterday, let's look forward. My question fairly direct one is this. How do senators and politicians of any stripe that have to do with governing this country, who have sworn an oath to defend the Constitution, and I'll just emphasize the domestic enemies against which they're to defend it, how do they turn their back and say, let's ignore what's happened in the past? You know, the murder was yesterday. Today's a new day. Let's look forward when it comes to the administration's possible criminal activities and abuses of power. That's it. How do you guys look yourself in the mirror?
Well, first of all, Larry, don't use the word you guys. There's 100 people who have very different points of view and who look at that issue differently. George Bush has not visited the state of Vermont. State of Vermont's the only state that Bush has not visited in his 8 years. I don't know if he will come here in the next couple of weeks or not. And that's because I think from the very beginning, the people of this state understood what his administration was about. Use the word lawlessness, lack of respect for the Constitution. We understood that. I understand that. And I think that Congress must take a look at what he has done. And we must be clear about what he has done that is illegal, what he has done that is unconstitutional, not only from a punishment perspective, but most importantly, to make sure that that never happens again, that we don't have a president who has a signing statement who refuses to enforce legislation that was passed. So it is an issue that has to be looked at. But among other things, we also have to rebuild our economy and make sure that people have health care.
Yeah, I'm so glad to hear you talking that way. Senator Bernie Sanders, Sanders.Senate.gov, his website. Bernie, thanks again for being with us today.
Good to be with you, Tom.
And Happy New Year to you.
And Happy New Year to all of the listeners.
Thank you, Bernie. Coming up next, Lamar Waldron, Legacy of Secrecy.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620kpoj.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the second day of the brand new year, 2009, and the day after the Cuban Revolution, of all things. It's really quite remarkable what happened in Cuba in 1958, 1959. And I wanted to get on Lamar Waldron, my co-author. Or I guess he's the author, I'm the co-author, of Ultimate Sacrifice, John and Robert Kennedy, The Plan for a Coup in Cuba and the Murder of JFK, our first book, and now our second book, which is just now out in hardcover, Legacy of Secrecy. For those of you watching the TomVision free webcam that we've got over at AirAmerica.com and TomHartman.com, I'm holding it up for the camera. Legacy of Secrecy, The Long Shadow of the JFK Assassination. Robert Kennedy, National Security, the Mafia, and the Assassination of Martin Luther King. Lamar Waldron, welcome to the show.
Great to be here, Tom.
And let me just, for our listeners, lay out what we're going to deal with over the next hour. In the first segment, there are four segments to this to our show, what Cuba's 50th celebration birthday was really celebrating. In our second segment, how the coup attempt in Tom Cruise's Valkyrie became a CIA model for what happened in the fall of 63. In our third segment, how anti-U.S. Cuban operations contributed, of all things, to Martin Luther King's assassination, and how Nixon and Hunt's Cuban actions in 60, 63, and 72 led right straight to Watergate. And in our, and I just saw Frost Nixon. I don't know if you've seen it, Lamar. Interesting movie. And
great.
And in our fourth segment, how Cuba Watergate and the secrecy surrounding JFK's murder led to the Cheney-Rumsfeld-Bush dynasty, which actually began under Nixon, grew under Ford, and blossomed years later with tragic results, how Obama can avoid some of these same mistakes. So let's get into it. Lamar, you and I have been working on this thing for 20 years. We did research together for the better part of well over a decade. It led, and you've been doing most of the writing since then, led directly to this book the first book on JFK's assassination, Ultimate Sacrifice, and now this new book, Legacy of Secrecy, the outcome of the secrecy around the death of John Kennedy. Let's deal with this first quarter topic. Cuba just celebrated their 50th anniversary. Fidel's triumphal drive into Havana in 1959, and JFK's how did that lead to JFK's 63 coup attempt?
I'm so glad you asked that question, Tom, and I'm grateful for the opportunity because your listeners are going to learn over the next hour what's really the hidden history of U.S.-Cuba relations and why this 45-year impasse between the U.S. and Cuba that's kept things frozen since JFK's murder is really all due to the government secrecy that surrounded JFK's murder and why dealing with that secrecy and dealing with Cuba today are so intimately linked. And that really goes back to 1959, January 1st, 1959. And they just celebrated, as you just pointed out, the 50th anniversary of the Cuban Revolution. Now, what most people don't know, and unfortunately I've looked at most of the mainstream media's articles and coverage today, and what they don't really explain and tell you much is that the 50th anniversary of the revolution was celebrated not in Havana, but in Santiago, Cuba's second largest city.
Right, which is down in the south and was where Fidel Castro was from.
Exactly. And what people should realize is, and this will start to kind of rewrite the history of Cuba to most people, Fidel Castro wasn't the guy who was triumphant in Havana on January the 1st when the American and mafia-backed U.S. Backed by the U.S. dictator Batista fled. He had been propped up through the 50s by the Eisenhower-Nixon administration, in bed with the mafia. He finally left Cuba on January the 1st, 1959. Fidel wasn't there. And that's because, unlike most conventional history, including Fidel's spin machine, Fidel didn't single-handedly win the revolution. There were a lot of revolutionary groups. He had a lot of people working very closely with him, not just Che Guevara and his brother Raul Castro, but many more. And it was some of those people that were in Havana. Now, Fidel was in Santiago. And what he did was, of course, he took credit for the revolution, beginning a trend that would only accelerate over the next few years and help lead to that tragedy in Dallas in 63. And what he did was he drove in an open Jeep over the next several days to Havana. So Batista leaves, Fidel proclaims the revolution has been won, and he won it, but he had a lot of help in Santiago. Then he takes this long drive in an open Jeep to Havana, drawing increasing... I'm sorry, what was that, Tom?
It's kind of a three-day motorcade, reminiscent of the Kennedy motorcade.
Exactly right. And it's in an open Jeep, unlike Kennedy, not in a limo, but still an open car, showing that Castro, even though he was from, the wealthier class in Cuba, is a man of the people, and the crowds become increasingly large. He gets to Havana after this long drive through the Cuban countryside. Now that did two things. First off, when he got to Havana, he began what became a several-year trend of basically consolidating his power. And that would lead by 63 to some of his cohorts and the people who had really helped him becoming very disgruntled with him. The other thing it did was the drive in the open Jeep became one of Fidel's symbols. Tremendous security whenever Fidel would give one of his big speeches or at the big ceremonies. But what he would do almost every weekend would be to drive from Havana to his beach house at Varadero Beach in an open Jeep so he could be, the man of the people and people could see him. And by 1963, two things had happened. That was the one time that the U.S. and disgruntled Cuban officials, had access to Fidel if they wanted to eliminate him, was in that open Jeep drive that he would take every weekend to his Varadero Beach house. So what most people don't realize, and what you and I were told by some of the two dozen people we talked with who worked with John and Robert Kennedy, they started telling us this, back in the early 1990s. Mm-hmm. We found thousands of documents that backed up what they said at the National Archives. And, while a million CIA files about the JFK assassination are still secret, because these people that worked with John and Robert Kennedy helped us, we were able to put the story we're about to tell together. So by 1963, some of these Cuban officials with Fidel were very disgruntled, and the CIA's efforts to get rid of Fidel had not worked. Now, what most people don't realize, and this ties directly into Watergate and what you see in Frost-Nixon, is before JFK was elected, Richard Nixon was Eisenhower, President Eisenhower's point man for Cuba. Vice President Eisenhower was running, Vice President Nixon was running for president against JFK in 1960. The original October surprise, what was supposed to get Vice President Nixon elected president, was the hiring of the mafia to shoot Fidel Castro right before the 1960 election. Now, people also need to realize, unfortunately, many young people today hear about a U.S. president and the mafia. They think of JFK because they've heard he shared a girlfriend with mobsters and somehow the mafia helped JFK in the 60 election. What our books, Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy, clearly document, using a lot of files from the archives and lots of historical sources, is that the mafia actually gave Richard Nixon much more help. The mafia had flourished under
Richard
Nixon.
In the election of 1960.
Right. In the election in the 1960s, because the mafia had been able to run wild and flourish during the 50s. They not only had Havana, they had most of the United States. In fact, that's how JFK came to prominence. He and his brother Bobby, when JFK was a senator, was going after the mafia, especially the mob bosses in Chicago, Tampa, and Louisiana. So JFK built his reputation as a mob buster. And the mafia did not want to see JFK become president. Sure, some mafia figures supported both sides, so they'd win no matter who came out. But Richard Nixon got the lion's share of the mafia's support. And under Nixon, who was handling Cuba for Eisenhower, the CIA and people like E. Howard Hunt, a name that's not unfamiliar to your listeners, basically hired the mafia, especially mob bosses from Chicago, Tampa, and eventually New Orleans, basically to shoot Fidel Castro right before the 60 election. You know, there would be the excuse for the U.S. invasion. And on that wave of patriotism, Richard Nixon would ride into office. Well, didn't happen. Unfortunately, what the CIA did, they kept working with the mafia. Of course, the Bay of Pigs happened. That was a big fiasco. What most people don't realize, but even mainstream historians have begun to acknowledge, the reason the Bay of Pigs was a fiasco was the CIA didn't think a little group of Cubans were about to overtake Cuba. They figured the mafia would shoot Fidel right before the invasion happened. That would force JFK's hand.
Well said. Lamar Waldron is with me. The new book, Legacy of Secrecy, The Long Shadow of the JFK Assassination by Lamar Waldron with Tom Hartman. And we're talking about that whole era and how it has come all the way to the Bush administration. Next up, Valkyrie.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Yeehaw is not a foreign policy. Tom Hartman, Nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Lionel with you. Most of you either have or know someone that has an inflammatory disease. You know, arthritis, asthma, allergies, diabetes, heart disease, sinus conditions, and even back and joint pain are crippling our country. There's an anti-inflammatory and pain reliever that has been prescribed by physicians for over 30 years in Europe and Asia. It's so effective, it's been used by Olympic athletes to deal with the pain and swelling from injury and surgery. Serapeptase RX comes with an unconditional guarantee and has no known side effects or interactions with medications. Just $23.99 for a 2-month supply, and I want you to try it. Visit www.myairamericaradio.com or call 1-888-825-9199. That's www.myairamericaradio.com or call 888-825-9199. 1-888-825-9199 for Serapeptase RX.
Taking the complicated and making it sound simple.
Didn't he look like he's used to having shoes thrown at him? I mean, seriously, didn't the president look completely comfortable with that shoe coming at his head?
Randy Rhodes.
He uses like his best cheerleader skills, and he's bobbing and weaving. And he stood there just like on 9/11 and stared into the crowd.
The Randy Rhodes Show.
You're at a podium, you dimwit. Get down.
3 to 6.
And in between shoes, he had that same dimwitted look on his face that he had on 9/11 when he was sitting there reading my Petco.
On AM 620. KPOJ.
Boy, am I glad to be done with my Christmas shopping.
I know.
And now I just want to relax.
Me too. Except there's one more store we should check out.
No way!
Because this weekend we can get a Sony, Samsung, or Panasonic TV at an incredible price.
Really? Where?
At Video Only's After Christmas Clearance Sale. They're really cutting deals.
Because of the economy?
Yep. So this is our chance to get what we wanted for Christmas.
Are the prices really that good?
For 3 days they are. And Video Only has the top-rated models we were thinking about.
All right. The best stuff cheap is worth the trip.
At Video Only, you won't find huge stores with refrigerators or computers, but you will find the best deals on HD TVs, Blu-rays, cameras, camcorders, and home theater systems. Shop around. Just make sure you visit Video Only, because if you don't,
you'll be sorry.
In Jansen Beach, Clackamas, Beaverton, and Salem, Video Only.
And now, another reason to switch to Geico.
They say the best defense is a good offense, but when it comes to safe driving, Geico believes a good defense is, well, a good defense. If you're 50 or older and you complete an approved defensive driving course, you could qualify for a special discount on your Geico car insurance, up to an additional 10%. Wow, sounds more like a defensive savings course.
For details, visit geico.com, where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Special discount not available in all states.
Last week, millions tuned in and discovered Christian Slater and Christian Slater in NBC's all-new hit, My Own Worst Enemy. Tonight, Christian Slater is Henry, family man.
Daddy's home!
Christian Slater is Edward, highly trained operative.
How was the mission?
Killed it.
Critics are calling it great, captivating, and fall's most promising series. My Own Worst Enemy, after Chuck and Heroes, all new NBC Tonight.
Thank you!
How much could you be saving on car insurance? $300, $400, $500? There's a real easy way to find out. Just go to geico.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
So you love listening to the radio. At work, at the park, at the gym, at your kids' play. Well, all thanks to the iHeartRadio app on your iPhone. Download it for free at iHeartRadio.com. We think you'll heart it. A lot.
Now more of Tom Hartman Nationwide
on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman radio program, talk radio for the rest of us here on your radio support group for We the People. We're talking with Lamar Waldron. I am the co-author. He's the primary author of Ultimate Sacrifice, John and Robert Kennedy, The Plan for a Coup in Cuba and the Murder of JFK, and now our newest book out just in the last few weeks, Legacy of Secrecy, the last few months, Legacy of Secrecy, The Long Shadow of the JFK Assassination. The website for that second book, legacyofsecrecy.com. Lamar, this segment's rather short. It's about 4.5 minutes. Let's get into how the coup attempt in Tom Cruise's movie, Valkyrie, which I'm guessing many people have seen, became a CIA model for the JFK, the original, not the movie, but how the original plot against Hitler became a CIA model for the coup against, or the CIA's plot against Castro.
Well, that's exactly right, Tom. And what people, even if they haven't seen the movie, most people are aware that a group of German officers, basically military officers, tried to assassinate Adolf Hitler back during World War II. What most people don't realize is that in September of 1963, a couple of months before JFK's assassination, top CIA officials met with the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the United States and talked about that very plan. Now, they were explaining that plan to the Joint Chiefs because at that very time, John and Robert Kennedy were working with the number three man in Cuba, the top officer in the Cuban military, the man who founded the Cuban military, Commander Juan Almeida. And he was working with the United States, with the Kennedys, and he was planning to stage a coup, a military coup, essentially against Fidel Castro on December the 1st, 1963, 10 days after Dallas.
Now, this was not, A, they didn't know Dallas was happening, and B, Juan Almeida is the guy who stood Wasn't he on the platform with Raul Castro yesterday?
That's true. He has been more prominent in Cuba than ever since this information started to come out in our first book, Ultimate Sacrifice, and we have so much more in Legacy of Secrecy. And in the last segment, we'll get to how Juan Almeida, JFK's ally from 63, is really a key to resolving the situation between the U.S. and Cuba today. Yeah. But back in the fall of 63, he was working for John and Robert Kennedy. I'll be very quick here so your listeners can get right on top of this. He was going to arrange for Fidel to be assassinated. While Fidel was in that open Jeep driving to Varadero Beach on December the 1st, Fidel would be shot. Almeida wouldn't take the credit. JFK's Cuban exile allies, some of whom we talked to, they wouldn't take the credit. The assassination would be blamed on a Russian or Russian sympathizer. Almeida would then invite U.S. forces into the U.S. to prevent a Soviet takeover. And all this would be very secret. It would never be revealed that Commander Almeida was secretly working for John and Robert Kennedy, not the following week, not the following month, not the following decade. That would never be known. That's why all of this was so secret. And the mafia was banned from the coup plan, was banned from reopening their casinos after the coup, unfortunately. The Kennedys were waging the biggest war against the mafia the United States had ever seen, and three mob bosses from the Chicago mob, the Tampa mafia, and the godfather of Louisiana and Texas infiltrated this top-secret coup plan and used parts of it to assassinate JFK in Dallas after first trying in Chicago and Tampa, trying to assassinate him in a motorcade in an open car, finally succeeding in Dallas in a way that then forced poor Bobby Kennedy to work with his hated enemies, LBJ, and J. Edgar Hoover of the FBI, to cover all this up to prevent World War III, because, of course, this was just 1 year after that tense nuclear standoff at the Cuban Missile Crisis. So there was all this secret stuff going on. This incredible coup plan right out of the Valkyrie movie was supposed to happen in Cuba, but the American public didn't know, the American press didn't know, most U.S. officials didn't know. Secretary of State Dean Rusk told me he only learned right after JFK's death that this was a real operation. But that's why there was so much secrecy. The mafia infiltrated that plan, used things from the way JFK was killed in the open car in Dallas, to even the bullet in Oswald's rifle, to connect this, to make it look as if Fidel did have something to do with JFK's murder. That's why so much had to be covered up. Now, the mafia was able to infiltrate the coup plan because the CIA, especially CIA official Richard Helms, had continued to work with the mafia as kind of a backup plan. So the mafia killed JFK, particularly those three mob bosses. The CIA did not kill JFK, but Richard Helms, essentially the number four official in the CIA, had to cover up his unauthorized use of the mafia in the anti-Fidel plot in order to protect his own position, job, and reputation. And that would set off a chain of events that would eventually lead to Martin Luther King's assassination and to Watergate.
Wow. And also to a whole army of JFK researchers concluding that because there was clearly a cover-up going on in the CIA, they were responsible for the death of Jack Kennedy.
Exactly that, and also J. Edgar Hoover and also LBJ. People look and say, well, these guys covered up. They must have been behind the assassination. No, that's not true. There was a good movie about JFK's murder, Oliver Stone, but it said, look at who did the cover-up. You'll see who did the crime. Unfortunately, wasn't true. Bobby Kennedy was a major driving force in the cover-up, as our books clearly document.
Right, and the cover-up was to prevent World War III. And in a few cases, to prevent people's careers from going down. But
exactly right, Tom.
Yeah. Lamar Waldron is with us. Legacy of Secrecy, the new book, legacyofsecrecy.com, the website. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
What would Hartman do? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station. Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to Talk Radio for the rest of us. Tom Hartman here with you, 34 minutes past the hour. Lamar Waldron is with us. Lamar and I wrote two books about the Kennedy assassination, researched and read. This is 20 years in the making. Ultimate Sacrifice, the John and Robert Kennedy, the plan for the coup in Cuba and the murder of JFK. And our new book just out, Legacy of Secrecy, The Long Shadow of the JFK Assassination. Our first book, by the way, made into an hour-long special by NBC, which plays from time to time on, is it the A&E channel, Lamar?
Discovery Channel.
Discovery Channel, thank you.
Right.
It's on a fairly regular basis, and the title of that, Lamar, is?
Conspiracy Files, JFK Assassination.
Great, thank you. And that was a hoot. You and I went to New York, and they shot us in this really cool old library. We're about 40 minutes out of the 60 minutes in the special, and it's based on our book. So, Legacy of Secrecy, our third segment here, how U.S. anti-Cuban operations contributed to Martin Luther King's assassination, how Nixon and E. Howard Hunt's Cuban actions in 1960, 63, and 72 led directly to Watergate, and the hidden Cuban backstory of Frost Nixon. Lamar, take that ball and run with it.
Okay. Well, let's look at the weeks right after JFK's murder. You know, the most tragic event in U.S. history to that time, the 9/11 for guys of our generation, men and women. And basically, U.S.-Cuba relations have been frozen solid in a block of ice since that time because LBJ and certain other high U.S. officials had seen the phony evidence that the three mafia bosses had planted, pointing at Fidel Castro. The president and other high officials knew they couldn't even dig into that in any sort of a public way without triggering World War III. So things have essentially remained frozen for the next 45 years. Commander Almeida, on the other hand, JFK and Bobby Kennedy's ally, number three man in the Cuban government, the head of the Cuban army, he remained unexposed. Fidel Castro suspected instead Che Guevara, put Che Guevara under house arrest by December the 1st, 1963, the date when the coup was supposed to happen. Che Guevara was under house arrest. Fidel thought he was going to stage the coup. So Fidel wouldn't learn about Commander Almeida for decades. Instead, he focused suspicion on Che Guevara, which eventually led to the things that they kind of had to leave out of the new Che movie, which I hear is also good, has a great performance by Benicio del Toro, but is structured in an unusual way so they don't have to deal with a lot of problems because Fidel basically eventually exiled Che from Cuba twice because he suspected him of these coup plans and led to eventually to Che's death.
Right.
Now, back in the United States.
And Almeida, let me just, for our listeners who just tuned in, Almeida, Commander Juan Almeida, was the number three guy in Cuba at that time, the commander of the army. He yesterday was on the platform with Raul Castro. He's now arguably the number two guy in Cuba. And he was the guy who was working with Robert Kennedy to assassinate Fidel Castro in December 5th of 1963, an assassination that got put on hold and ultimately canceled because John Kennedy was murdered just a few weeks earlier.
And there was so much secrecy. E. Howard Hunt, you know, as you and I were told by one of Bobby's top Cuban exile aides back in 1992, E. Howard Hunt helped to provide for Commander Almeida's wife and two children who had been gotten out of Cuba on a pretext before the coup date, before JFK was killed. They stayed out of Cuba for decades. They never went back to live to Cuba. So there was a lot of secrecy that could have triggered a nuclear confrontation, had to be kept secret.
Yeah, they were taken to Canada, and money was put in his private account. Do you think, Lamar, that the Castro administration learned of Almeida as a consequence of the publication of our first book?
Oh, not at all, because Fidel Castro learned, as we'll get to in the last segment, in 1990, when Commander Almeida disappeared, that's when Dean Rusk and others started talking to us about it.
Right.
But before
we
get to them, let's go back to Martin Luther King. Because there were a lot of cover-ups to hide intelligence failures as well as to protect Commander Almeida. You had J. Edgar Hoover covering up his botched investigation of the mafia in the weeks after JFK's murder and a white supremacist that was helping the mob boss of Louisiana, who confessed, by the way. A lot of these people confessed credible confessions to close associates that are in our book for the first time. And so you had J. Edgar Hoover, FBI head, covering up his agency's intelligence failures. You had Richard Helms, who then became CIA director under LBJ and later Nixon, who was then in a position to keep his secret work with the mafia on his unauthorized plots, kind of a backup plan to the main plan with Almeida that hadn't been authorized by his CIA director or JFK. So he had all these cover-ups going on by 1968. The problem was by 1968, you had a racist in Georgia named Joseph Miltier, whom the FBI should have caught back at the time of JFK's murder because he was on tape talking about JFK being shot from a building with a high-powered rifle before the assassination, but Hoover botched that. By 1968, Miltier headed a small group of racists here in Atlanta, and they wanted to kill Martin Luther King. They'd been collecting money for that purpose. Long story short, they turned to Carlos Marcello, the mafia boss of Louisiana and Texas, the man who had spearheaded JFK's assassination, to broker the King hit. James Earl Ray was a low-level drug runner for Carlos Marcello, who became a drug runner because of some U.S.-backed anti-Castro operations that went on at Expo 67. That's all described in our book, Legacy of Secrecy. So these Cuban operations created by the U.S. created an opening for James Earl Ray. And James Earl Ray, J.B. Stoner, was an associate of Carlos Marcello's white supremacist ally. And they even put out word that in the months before Martin Luther King was killed by James Earl Ray, that Ray had been part of U.S. anti-Castro Cuban operations. Again, this is all right out of congressional files, most of it forgotten today. So we again see how all this secrecy about Cuba from 1963 boomeranged on Martin Luther King in 68 and caused further cover-ups then, because the FBI and CIA could not admit things at that time that they had covered up in 1963. That's why today many people suspect that the CIA or the FBI killed Martin Luther King, which is simply not the case, and we lay out a very compelling, well-documented case in Legacy of Secrecy to that effect. So Martin Luther King's death can be traced to all that secrecy surrounding JFK's murder. And then if we flash ahead a few years, we get to Watergate.
But wouldn't it be more accurate, Lamar, to say that the ability of these guys to assassinate Martin Luther King and get away with it could be traced to that?
You're exactly right, Tom. That's definitely the best way to put it, because if there had not been so much government secrecy around JFK's murder, these people would not have been free. In fact, one of them...
They would have been exposed and in prison long ago.
Well, and one of them was almost caught the year before Martin Luther King was killed, Joseph Miltier, the white supremacist in Georgia. But there were cover-ups then related to Cuba. So we keep seeing how this corrosive effect of this government secrecy continues to boomerang on America. We flash ahead to Watergate. Richard Nixon is worried that his plot to kill Fidel in 1960 is going to come out. That's why you have E. Howard Hunt, who had been working on the most secret U.S. Cuban operations since 1960, including the JFK Almeida Q plan. That's why he's at the heart of Watergate. A dozen veterans of the JFK Almeida coup plan are involved to one degree or another in Watergate. That's why it was those particular Cuban exiles who were involved at the Watergate. In fact, in Legacy of Secrecy, we show for the first time in any book the actual document the Watergate burglars were after.
The bottom line here is that the whole point of Watergate was that Nixon had been committing crimes as vice president, and he thought that the Democrats were going to reveal this in the election, and so he's in 72, and so he sends the guys who were participants in that crime with him into the Watergate Hotel to break in and steal those documents, and it blows up and turns into Watergate. And I don't think anybody knows that about Watergate.
That's right. In fact, there was more than one Watergate break-in. They first tried to find that document at the Chilean embassy using a couple of the same Cuban exiles. This was a couple of months before the Watergate break-in. So Watergate was not a setup by the CIA. Richard Helms had to cover up as much as Richard Nixon did. They had so much on each other, H.R. Haldeman said neither man could breathe. So you simply had Nixon, who was desperate. He was way ahead in the polls, but he knew if it came out, he had been working not only with the mafia in 60, but he had continued working with the mafia. The mafia had continued to support Nixon, and in fact, the mafia infiltrated Nixon's Watergate operation the same way they had infiltrated the JFK Almeida coup plan. So the mafia keeps coming out ahead, no matter who's president. And that's really the hidden backstory behind the very excellent Frost-Nixon film, which I think director Ron Howard deserves credit for bringing that forward in a way that focuses new attention on that. Because what he could not deal with, because it would have been a whole separate movie, is that Richard Nixon continued to get that mafia support, not just while he was president, even
up until the day he died.
Well, and when you see him when he's coming back from playing golf in the movie, Nixon sometimes golfed with members of the mafia after he had to resign the presidency because he just didn't care at that point. And the U.S. press, for some reason, has been very reluctant to delve into the extensively documented ties between Nixon and the mafia that we illuminate in Ultimate Sacrifice and Legacy of Secrecy. And again, we should say people can find out a lot more and actually read big chunks of both books for free if they go to legacyofsecrecy.com and follow the links to Buzz Flash and the Mary Farrell Foundation and other places where we've made a lot of this information available.
Yeah, amen. Lamar Waldron with me. Lamar is the author. I'm the co-author of Legacy of Secrecy, The Long Shadow of the JFK Assassination. And before that, Ultimate Sacrifice, John and Robert Kennedy, The Plan for the Coup in Cuba and the Murder of JFK. And Lamar, when Lamar comes back, we're going to be talking about how Cuba, Watergate, and the legacy surrounding this murder led right to Cheney, Rumsfeld, and Bush. Stick around.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Annoying Republicans by defending the Constitution. Tom Hartman, Nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Individual results may vary. Program not available in all states. See contract for complete terms.
If you're tired of credit card debt with high rates and fees, if you're in over your head dealing with high monthly payments, there's powerful information the credit card companies don't want you to know. If you have more than $10,000 in credit card debt, you have the power to settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. That's bad news for credit card companies, but it's great news for you. We're Credit Answers, and we'd like to offer you free information that will show you how to settle your credit card debt with low monthly payments you can afford. It's yours free by calling 1-800-600-1983. You don't have to declare bankruptcy. Credit Answers represents the highest standards in the industry. We've already helped thousands of people like you save millions of dollars. Just give us 10 minutes and learn how we can help you live better, debt-free. Call for this valuable free information at 1-800-600-1983. That's 1-800-600-1983. 1-800-600-1983.
Taking the complicated and making it sound simple.
This is a change in the definition of what America is.
Rachel Maddow.
We've long had a very, 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 very diverse country. We just have been very resistant to the idea that our government ought to look as diverse as our country.
That has now changed.
But it is also a big day for the Democratic Party, and it is a very big day for the Republican Party.
Rachel Maddow.
Which now has no obvious leader, no clear direction.
Evening, 6 to 8.
No clear guiding ideology, either economically or in terms of foreign policy.
On AM 620 KPOJ.
Back to programming in a minute, but first, listen to this. Since the New York Mint is releasing to the public classic U.S. gold coins, there's a number you can call for free historical information and a free DVD. But first, it says that during the Great Depression, people were greedy for gold coins because no one wanted to face economic turbulence without the security of gold. The government finally took them out of circulation, and a government meltdown was ordered. That's why most of us have never even seen a classic U.S. gold coin. But recently, a stash was discovered in Europe. Gleaming U.S. gold coins minted between 1866 and 1933, all uncirculated. It says the New York Mint is releasing them to the public on a first-come, first-served basis when you call, here it is, 1-800-500-8257. Wouldn't that be amazing to hold U.S. history? Okay, if you want that free historical information and the free collector's DVD, the number to call is 1-800-500-8257. 1-800-500-8257.
Here's what's happening at AM 620 KPOJ.
KPOJ invites you to join us at the Crystal Ballroom Tuesday, January 20th as we celebrate the swearing-in of our 44th president and embark on the beginning of 4 years of change. A benefit for the Oregon Food Bank, admission's free, with a suggested donation of cans of food. Entertainment and a silent auction are just a couple of the fun things to expect. Keep listening to KPOJ for complete details on this 21 and over only event.
And that's what's happening at AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's progressive talk station.
Salagadoola, metchigapoola, bibbidi-bobbidi-boo.
You must be your fairy godmother. Yes.
It doesn't take a fairy godmother to tell you that the right fit means everything.
Good heavens, child. You can't go in that.
Children under 4'9" need to be in a booster seat because they aren't ready for adult safety belts alone. Many parents miss the important step of booster seats.
Maybe you better explain things to him.
Booster seats raise your child up so that a safety belt designed for adults will fit and protect them properly.
Oh, that does make a difference.
Remember that 4'9" is the magic number. And get your little pumpkin there safely in a booster seat.
Hop in, my dear. Oh, thank you.
And like Cinderella, you can live happily ever after.
It's like a dream. A wonderful dream come true.
For more information, visit boosterseat.gov. This has been a message from the U.S. Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, brought to you by you, our listeners, supporting our radio station, supporting our sponsors. Let them know you're listening. Give them some love. Let them know that you care. Thanks so much for being with us. Lamar Waldron is with me. Lamar and I have written two books, Ultimate Sacrifice, John and Robert Kennedy, The Plan for a Coup in Cuba and the Murder of JFK, and the new book, Legacy of Secrecy, The Long Shadow of the JFK Assassination. You can read all about them at legacyofsecrecy.com. Legacy of Secrecy just out. We've been giving away copies on this book, in fact, for the last couple of weeks, or on this show for the last couple of weeks. And Lamar, to wrap this hour up, and I'm not, after this hour, we're going to do our Anything Goes hour, but I'd rather not take calls on the Kennedy assassination without Lamar on the show, and this is Lamar's hour. I wanted to nail this down. We'll have Lamar back to take calls as we go into the new year, but for right now, I just wanted Lamar to get everything out. So our fourth segment, how Cuba, Watergate, and the secrecy surrounding JFK murder led directly to Dick Cheney, Don Rumsfeld, George Bush, this whole dynasty which began under Nixon.
Well, that's right, because most people don't realize that in the Nixon White House during Watergate were his counsel, Donald Rumsfeld, and an assistant named Dick Cheney. I mean, people have heard of Nixon's White House counsel named John Dean. They don't know he had another White House counsel named Donald Rumsfeld. And then George Bush Sr., of course, became the head of the Republican National Committee right after Watergate during the height of the cover-up.
Right, and then the CIA.
That's exactly right, because what happened was, because there was not a truly thorough house cleaning, you know, because Ford, who became president upon Nixon's resignation, then pardoned Nixon, and there was a general feeling at the time, well, hey, we've gotten 2-3 dozen people, the Republican Party would be decimated. Frankly, some Republican leaders said, well, look, you know, you're going to ruin the American political system. Don't go after everybody who committed any small crime. You know, you've gotten enough. Because those people backed off and Ford, a former member of the Warren Commission, became president, a lot of cover-ups not only continued but accelerated in the 1970s because Congress finally started investigating the CIA mafia attempts to kill Castro that led very directly to JFK's murder. But in the Ford administration, under Gerald Ford and his chief of staff, Donald Rumsfeld, later his chief of staff, Dick Cheney, and his CIA director, Ford CIA director, George H.W. Bush, an awful lot of material about the JFK Almeida coup plan and how the mafia infiltrated it was covered up and actively withheld from Congress. So much of what we see today about the current problems with government secrecy involving people like Bush's son and Dick Cheney began back in the 1970s. So, and again, what Obama in his administration, I hope, learns is if you don't clean out these rats' nests, when you have the opportunity, in other words, in the wake of Watergate, these people and their assistants will resurface literally in just a few years, because Dick Cheney had nothing to do with JFK's murder. But he knew, as Gerald Ford's chief of staff and Gerald Ford's campaign manager in 76, if information came out that made it look like Gerald Ford was either a fool who had been deceived or had actively covered up information about JFK's murder, even for a good reason, there would be no way that Gerald Ford would become elected president of the United States. So we again see how this, you can be part of the cover-up without being part of the crime at all. So now we flash ahead to today. As you and I have talked, Commander Almeida remained unexposed in Cuba until 1990. He briefly disappeared. Kennedy associates, eventually two dozen, began talking to us. After the fall of the Soviet Union, Commander Almeida had to be brought back by Fidel. Why? Because in the 1990s, just as in 1963, just as today, Commander Almeida is the highest black official in Cuba, a country that by some estimates is 70% of African origin. So Fidel and Raul Castro, both white of course, still need Almeida today, just like they needed him in 1960, 63, and the mid-90s, and today. Now what's happened is the U.S. government, they declassified Commander Almeida's role for JFK back in 2005. So when we finally revealed his name in our trade paperback of Ultimate Sacrifice 2006, we weren't telling Fidel anything he didn't already know and that the government had not already put
right.
out.
And in fact, in the original hardcover, we didn't reveal his name because I had personally, back 15 years ago, been threatened with imprisonment or execution if I ever said his name out loud by one of the senior government officials in the United States.
That's exactly right. In fact, you and I could be said that we were part of the cover-up for a while, from the early 90s till 2005, but for the best of reasons, because people had shared that secret with us, told us, look, it could be his life, his family's life, and so we
well,
saw
it was also an ongoing active CIA operation.
Exactly right.
And you blow that, you're committing treason, which you know is what Dick Cheney did with Valerie Plame, but we chose
right.
not
we,
to
we
do
we will let other people do that. You and I are patriotic Americans. So you know, Fidel finally made it clear in 2001 that he did know fully about Commander Almeida. But here's the interesting thing. As you pointed out, and people can see if they go to Air America today and look at the news story on the 50th anniversary, Almeida was sitting next to Raul Castro yesterday. When Raul Castro has issued olive branches, like in a speech last year, to the United States, he's often had Commander Almeida on the stage with him.
Yep.
When Fidel Castro put out an article talking about negotiations with Obama just a few weeks ago, the Cuban government, the official news agency, pulled an old article by Almeida and made that the headline right below Fidel's call for negotiations with Obama. So the bottom line today is twofold. Number one, Commander Almeida, JFK's old ally from 1963, could be a key to moving things forward today, because it's almost as if Raul Castro is saying, look, if you've made a big deal, United States, that you will not talk with me or my brother Fidel, talk to this guy. You were talking to him in 63, and there are still Cuban exiles who worked with JFK.
And very quickly, number two, Lamar.
To do that. And so what people should do, contact their congressperson, their senator, say, look, declassify all the JFK files, and let's move forward with Cuba. It's been 45 years since JFK's murder. The files should be released, and we need to resolve this impasse with Cuba that's persisted since JFK's death.
Well said. Lamar Waldron, LegacyOfSecrecy.com. Anything goes Friday next.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Thanks for listening to the AM 620 KPOJ podcast, sponsored by the Better World Club, providing travel services, auto insurance, and 24/7 nationwide roadside assistance, but not part of the highway lobby. This is Tom Hartman, Better World Club member since first moving to Oregon. Check out their eco benefits like the nation's only bicycle roadside assistance and their e-newsletter, Kicking Asphalt, at betterworldclub.com.
Welcome to AM 620 KPOJ. Now Tom Hartman, nationwide, 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ and 620KPOJ.com.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back to the third hour of our Friday program. Here it is now officially 2009, 17 days and just a few hours until George W. Bush officially leaves office. Oh, man, what a collective sigh of relief the world is going to let go of. I just, almost no matter what Barack Obama does, nothing could be this bad. No president in the history of the United States has been, on the one hand, so incompetent, on the other hand, so malicious, on the third hand, so narcissistic and so destructive, and on the fourth hand, so lacking in any understanding of the Constitution or the constitutional history of this nation as George W. Bush. He's not just going to go down in history as the worst president of the United States. He's going to go down in history as the guy who did the most damage to this republic of any president in the United States. Paul Krugman writing in today's New York Times. Great, great op-ed, Paul. Well done. About how this really isn't just George W. Bush. This goes back to Reagan. It really goes back a little before Reagan. Reagan was just the first president to carry this mental illness, these bizarre notions into the White House. But this whole idea that the Republicans have had, that the government is somehow the evil entity.
I've always felt the nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
That is what has destroyed, to the extent that this country has been destroyed. We're still here. We're still strong. We still have a lot going for us. But we are now the most indebted nation in the world. When that man came into office, Ronald Reagan, we were the richest nation in the world. We are now the most indebted, over $10 trillion. $9 trillion of that, well, $8 trillion of that. About a trillion run up under the Clinton administration, but he eventually balanced the budget. I mean, he just inherited the first Bush disaster, but eight trillion of that run up by just three presidents, Reagan, Bush, and Bush. It's mind-boggling. You know, the average American is going to spend somewhere between $1,000 and $2,000 this year in income taxes just to pay interest on the money that was borrowed by Reagan, Bush, and Bush to try to make the economy look good and transfer trillions of dollars to their buddies in the defense industry. It's mind-boggling. So anyway, a tip of the hat to Paul Krugman on that. A few other things that are going on in the world that I think are worth noting, and then we'll pick up your phone calls here for this last half hour. The Democrats are, in fact, going to bar Burris, Roland Burris, from entering the Senate, maybe even physically. They might even have the sergeant at arms keep him out. As I said to Bernie, I think it's a mistake, but they've drawn their line in the sand, and I understand it. You know, they don't want to be tainted by corruption. They don't want to have any part of corruption associated with them. The problem is Blagojevich is not leaving. I would say if the Democrats in the Senate really wanted to do something about this, they should be working as aggressively as they can. And I don't know, maybe they've done everything they can, but it seems like there has to be more, maybe even just the bully pulpit of public relations, to get the House and Senate in the state of Illinois to impeach Blagojevich so that Pat Quinn, who's a good man, can come in and make an appointment. Because the last thing that we want is a special election in Illinois. It would be expensive. It would be a huge hassle. It would be time-consuming. It would air a million all the issues around the corruption that has existed in this party. It's time for the party to clean itself up, and I think it's doing it. And it's possible a Republican could win because, you know, Blagojevich is just so corrupt, even Democrats are sick and tired of him. And if the Republicans put up a good, honest, honorable, middle-of-the-road Republican, you might end up with a Republican sitting in that seat in the Senate. So anyhow, that's going on in Colorado. It looks like Denver Supervisor Bennett, Michael Bennett, the supervisor of the Denver Public Schools, good man, may well be replacing Interior Secretary nominee Ken Salazar. That announcement, in all probability, officially will come today or over the weekend. You know, we'll see how that shakes out and what's going on with that. But interesting. The gift shops in Crawford, Texas, by the way, now that George W. has said he's going back to Dallas, to hell with Crawford, they're a couple of them are closing down, going out of business. They're selling stuff at a bargain. So that's going on. It turns out that this guy that George Bush pardoned and then unpardoned, remember that? Well, he apparently not just – he got his hands caught in the cookie jar. Not only did this guy make his father make major contributions to the Republican National Committee, but this guy met with Bush twice. His father partied with him down at Crawford. And then they did an end around the Justice Department. And my guess is that if this had not come out in the news, and I'd be interested to know if this started out with a blogger, but ultimately it hit the corporate media. If this had not hit the corporate media, This pardon never would have been undone. And, you know, the lesson to be learned, well, if you go party with George down in Crawford, you can get a pardon. Just ask Scooter Libby, who has a commutation, and in all probability will get a pardon. Fox News broadcasting the Barack the Magic Negro, you know, the Chiron that runs across the bottom of the screen. This is what they ran yesterday. Happy New Year, and let's hope the Magic Negro does a good job. Fox News. No, I'm not joking. You can see the thing over at Think Progress, where they've also compiled some of the numbers for last year from the Bush administration. Just in the last year, 2008, 1.9 million jobs lost, 206 banks the government now owns stock in. We have 47.5 million Americans with no health insurance. Housing prices declined by 18% just last year. Health insurance premiums went up by 5% while everything else is in free fall deflation. 75% increase in the number of delinquent mortgages. One in 10 homes in America right now, either in foreclosure or within 3 weeks of it. The Dow Jones Industrial Average dropped 35%. And Bush's approval rating declined 9% down to 29%. Keeping in mind, 15 to 17% of Americans can't even identify the United States on a world map. So I think we know who it is who's giving Bush his positive ratings. This coal ash spill by the TVA, this 5.4 million cubic yards of toxic coal sludge. Here's the news that's not being talked about this stuff. It's radioactive. It is really some of the most horrible damage that comes from coal fly is what they call the stuff. It's the waste from burning coal. Isn't just that it's concentrated heavy minerals, lead and cadmium and mercury and all these things, but also it concentrates uranium and all the natural isotopes of uranium. It's radioactive. Meanwhile, the coal industry continues to talk about clean coal. There ain't no such thing. There are no commercial test products for clean coal. There is no demonstration projects for clean coal. The industry is spending a fortune advertising it. It doesn't exist. It doesn't exist. So, anyway, I think it's just really quite remarkable all the things that are going on out there in the world Your news update for the day. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Tim in Moore Park, California. Hey, Tim, what's on your mind today?
I love you, Tom. I'm Tim Callum Carrion. I'm running for U.S. President, U.S. Senate, and U.S. House. My platform is love, joy, truth, and freedom. My goal is to do the best I can and the best I can to have proper relationships. I don't heat my house. I recycle and I compost. And I had an improper relationship with a guy named Tom.
Okay, not this one.
Not this one.
So you've laid it all out, Tim, and you're running for
So I can't office. Get blackmailed for anything.
There you go. Larry Craig should have learned from your lesson. How are you running for all these offices at once? Are you just, like,
You call the 800 number for the Federal Election Commission. You have them send you Form 1 and Form 2. You fill them out. You make a copy, and you mail them back. And as soon as they get into the computer, you're a candidate.
Wow. Now, do you have a party affiliation?
I'm one of the major parties, but I don't want to say it on the air because if you say it on the air, you automatically lose 50% of the votes.
Okay.
Kind of like that's being on the radio.
You know, Tim, I was thinking earlier, one of the folks in the chat room said, Tom, it looks like you're daydreaming because they're watching me on Tom Vision. And I was sitting here during a break thinking, you know, maybe for 2009, what I should be encouraging people to do for at least 6 months or a year is join the Republican Party. And and the reason why is because the Republican Party it's the rat's nest. It's the core of toxic sickness in the United States. And if enough good people of goodwill joined it, they could throw the leadership out. They could have some influence over who the nominees are. They might be able to get the Republican Party back to some semblance of sanity as it had when Dwight Eisenhower was president, and get rid of the crazies. It's an interesting thought. I don't know. Tim, thanks for the call. Good luck on your races, and happy 2009. 866-303-2270, TomHartmann.com for our free live chat room. airamerica.com for our free live video camera. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Wasn't Jesus a community organizer? Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ.
Provider and licensing details are available.
If this is your paycheck and this is your debt, what are your options? File bankruptcy and tread water the next 7 years? Or make a call for Care One Credit Counseling Services and start getting out of debt today. A Care One Credit Counseling Agency can help you get immediate relief from stress caused by debt, and you'll have one lower monthly payment instead of the pile you have right now. Call a Care One agent today, and you can start saving hundreds of dollars in fees and interest payments. Care One agencies have helped over 4 million people get out of debt, and they can help you too. Call 800-498-2983, 800-498-2983, and find out how you can lower your monthly payments up to 57%. One 15-minute phone call can change your life. Call 800-498-2983, 800-498-2983.
You know, the ones, fives, tens, twenties, fifties, and hundreds, that money is backed by what is called the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, the Federal Reserve.
The Mike Malloy Show.
I don't know about you, but I have no faith in this government. And as far as its credit rating, if the U.S. government were rated by one of these rating companies,
what would it be? Zero worth?
It's Mike Malloy.
I mean, how do you rate a nation that's $12 trillion in debt?
Evening, 8 to 11. AM 620 KPOJ. 620KPOJ.com.
How much could you be saving on car insurance? $300, $400, $500? There's a real easy way to find out. Just go to GEICO.com or call 1-800-947-AUTO.
It's hard to talk to your kids about the S word because they're too young to think about bedroom activities. So you try to limit their exposure to adult behavior. But let's be honest, there's birds and bees stuff all over the place. On TV, 64% of programs include, you know, the internet's even worse. 42% of kids between 10 and 17 have inadvertently seen, well, funny business online. It's everywhere.
We know that S-word makes you uncomfortable. It's embarrassing. But you've got to be the parent. You've got to talk to us about sex. Because everyone else is, and they're not talking about waiting. That part's up to you. You don't have to be explicit about it. You don't have to talk about the parts. Just tell us how you feel. Tell us what to do. Tell us you want us to wait to do that stuff. For help starting the conversation, visit forparents.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and this station.
Honey, put this on top of the minivan.
We're only going for 2 weeks. You want me to pack the kitchen sink, too?
Well, is there room?
Hey, you guys. You going on vacation?
Who's that?
I don't know.
Because we're planning on robbing your house tonight.
All right, I'm calling an alarm service.
Wouldn't it be great if you could be warned of life's risks? If you have diabetes, you can. There's a simple blood test called A1C that can help measure your risk of complications from diabetes. Why is it important? Because more than 600 people every day die from diabetes and its complications. If your A1C is above 7, your doctor can show you how to lower it. If you have diabetes, know your risk. Know your A1C. Ask your doctor, or for more information, go to www.diabetesa1c.org or call 1-877-TEST-A1C. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation International, and the Ad Council.
I want to help more kids graduate from high school.
Help more families learn how to budget and save.
I want my neighbors to have access to health care.
Help create opportunities for everyone in your community. Give, advocate, volunteer. Live United. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Now back to Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
Helping you win the water cooler wars, Tom Hartman with you, 21 minutes past the hour. And right out of China, Remember a couple weeks ago we were talking when I was shoveling the global warming off my back deck and off our dock? I was speculating, I wonder if this has anything to do with the Chinese weather experiments. Well, get this. Wang Dianj, a Chinese citizen, was attending a wake in his home when an explosion took off half his roof and left him dead in the wreckage. Because it had been a stormy day, family members and police assumed lightning was what killed him and left his home in ruins. However, as they put him in the cremation chamber at his own funeral, his body exploded, causing the chamber's doors, the oven doors, to fly off their hinges. Only then did the spectators discover what it was that really killed the guy. His house had been hit by a weather rocket filled with silver iodide shot into the sky in order to break up hail into rain. It failed to explode in the atmosphere, fell through the guy's roof, acting like a bullet, killed him instantly as it was lodged in his body, and then it blew up in the cremation chamber. Yep, the Chinese are messing with the weather seriously. And maybe, who knows? Does this fall into the category of pigeons as robots in the planet Xenu? I just don't know. Tim in Detroit, Michigan. Hey, Tim, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. As I understand, Senator Burris hasn't been convicted of anything. Even Governor Blagojevich hasn't been convicted of anything. We have to have the presumption of innocence. I think the Democrats, Tom, are making a mistake by picking this fight. We have a stimulus package coming up by Barack Obama. Hopefully it's going to be a very good green and a very good jobs package, and we need all the Democratic votes we can get. The Republicans have promised a filibuster to this package.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that the reason that the Democrats are doing this is because they just don't want any taint of scandal associated with them. The Republicans, frankly, didn't give a damn about it and had no problem. I mean, you had Mr. Vitter, Senator Vitter, out there getting busted with a hooker. He comes back to the Senate, and he gets a standing ovation from his peers. You have, among others, Larry Craig comes back. He's doing just fine.
That what the Democrats have done too is by picking this fight with with the governor of Illinois. Even if they back off now, they're going to look like they have egg on their face.
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly if he wins his court case, which he may well, and if the legislature doesn't impeach him, then there's going to be no senator from Illinois for conceivably a year. And that's not good for the United States Senate. It's not good for the citizens of Illinois. I agree with you, Tim. I think the Democrats are making a mistake. I don't want to speak for Bernie.
Plus the stimulus package. I mean, and I understand from what I've heard that it's going to be a good one. We've got to get this through as fast as possible. We've got to start building jobs back in the U.S. because if we don't, man, I mean, our economy is going to be left in the dust in a few years.
Yeah, well said. Tim, thanks a lot for the call. I understand the Democrats' desire to be squeaky clean. I get it. But I think the political calculus on this, frankly, is more important right now. This is a crucial time for our economy, and we can't afford to have the Senate be held up any more than it has been. Mateo in Minnesota. Hey, Mateo.
Hey, Tom. Great show. I read an article on Wall Street this week by the Russian analyst Igor Panarin. I don't know if you remember.
Yes, we talked about it a couple of days ago on the air.
Show. Right. Yeah, this is actually in Brazil. I'm from Brazil, but I'm in the U.S. right now. But anyways, it has a lot of comments by analysts think that there's a possibility that will happen. The U.S. will subdivide due to not only political and cultural conflict, but also due to the with the main point now, the financial crisis in the U.S. Yeah. But if you see the southern states compared to the northern ones or even the two coasts, people are very, very different. Yeah. In my comment, I foresee that as well as a possibility. When we have commentators and TV shows such as Rush Limbaugh and then Sean Hannity, those guys created so much hatred. There's nothing you can do to convince some American Republicans that Bush is a, let's put it this way, not a qualified man to be the president of the United States. There's nothing can do to convince that he's a thief, corrupt, and a crook.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if put all together, though, with the financial crisis, people, there's a good possibility that we will divide, that like any empire.
Yeah, I would say, number one, that the guy who wrote that or who's actually giving a lot of speeches around the Soviet Union, he's never been outside the Soviet Union. He's never been to the United States. He doesn't understand how conflict in this country is celebrated, whereas conflict in the old Soviet Union was put down, people were imprisoned for it. He's looking at what happened in the Soviet Union when an economic crisis brought about the dissolution of what arguably should not have been a nation to begin with. It was a collection of very disparate states with different languages, even. And,
Tommy, this is actually fair what you're saying. However, when a nation is really big, geographically speaking, and people get a different, intellect, mm-hmm. Background, they actually start to be segregated among themselves, like I see in the U.S.
But we have been for years. You know, back in the 70s, there was this book called The Seven Nations of America, and they identified these seven regions that each has its own lingo, and each, you know, its own slang, each has its own worldview, each has its own foods. There are all these, you know, arguably America already is seven nations. But I just don't think that we're going to politically split
hopefully
up.
Hopefully not.
Yeah. Thank you, Mateo. It's a fascinating one to. Frankly, I think it's like a Rorschach test into the Russian mind. It's a more interesting insight into how the Russians think than into what the probabilities of the future of the United States are. 28 minutes.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Fighting mind-numbing incompetence. Tom Hartman, nationwide. Weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ. Now more of Tom Hartman nationwide on Portland's Progressive Talk Station, AM 620 KPOJ.
News without conflicts of global corporate interest. Tom Hartman here with you.
But maybe I'm crazy.
Well, I think we can safely say this guy in Sarasota is.
Maybe we're crazy.
Nah, just this guy.
Probably.
Yeah. Here's this guy. He's a 28-year-old Sarasota man. Don't have his name in this story. He's driving down the street, and he notices the cops are following him. He's been speeding. They're going to pull him over. They haven't turned their lights on yet, so he figures, okay, he's going to foil this, you know, in the process, you know, before it gets out of control. So he picks up his cell phone, dials 911, and says there's an armed robbery happening and about three blocks from where he is. So, of course, the cop car that's right behind him, being the closest one, goes off to the armed robber, and he thinks, ha, got away. Until they found out who did the bogus 911 call and discovered that the guy had a loaded gun in his car and that he was a felon who wasn't supposed to carry a loaded gun, and, you know, it just kind of gets worse and worse and worse. But what do you expect from a guy who thinks the way to get out of a traffic stop is to dial 911 and report an armed robbery that ain't happening? Oh, my. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Eddie in Dallas, Texas. Hey, Eddie, what's on your mind today?
How are you today?
I am well, Eddie. How are you?
Oh, better than most, worse than some.
Okay. What's up?
If you would clarify this for me, we know that the Senate and the Congress have a lot to do when they get in.
Yes.
But before that, we still have 18 days of Bush.
Yes.
And in that time, he can, let's say, forgive Cheney, Wolfowitz, Pearl, all of them.
He can pardon them.
Administration.
Yes.
Yes, he can pardon them. If that happens, what is the plan for when the new administration takes hold?
Right.
Because he said that they do need to investigate. Bernie did.
Right.
That, you know, definitely needs to be investigated. Well, how can they do that if they're pardoned?
Oh, you can still investigate somebody if they're pardoned. I don't know what the limits of the pardon are. I don't know if they apply to things like state crimes. You know, Vincent Bugliosi, who's been on this show a number of times about his book, The Prosecution of George W. Bush for Murder, suggests
right.
that these should not be considered federal crimes. They should be state and local crimes. If there's a county prosecutor and in his county is somebody who died in Iraq, that county prosecutor should bring county murder charges against George W. Bush. And I don't know if a presidential pardon would immunize him from that. It's a good question to ask Marjorie Cohen. We'll have to talk to Sean about getting Marjorie on specific to this point, because she's a constitutional law professor and scholar. The pardon power is, though, quite absolute. There's no way to limit it, to stop it, to undo it. But I suspect that it applies to all crimes committed in the United States, not just to federal crimes. I could be wrong on that. But it doesn't prevent...
I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say it doesn't prevent there being an airing of the crimes themselves. See, there were really two big mistakes that Gerald Ford made when he set this precedent. The first was pardoning Richard Nixon. But the second,
the second,
you could argue, was made by Jerry Ford. I would say, actually, it was made by the Democrats who controlled Congress at the time that Ford became president. And that was that they chose not to continue the investigations of Watergate, not to continue looking into Nixon. This is why, it took Lamar and I digging into this stuff, 20 years ago, to discover that what Richard Nixon was looking for in the Watergate hotel, that it had to do with crimes that he had committed in 1959 and 1960 as vice president, that had to do with Cuba and the mafia. And he was afraid that this stuff would come out and hurt him in the election, and justifiably so.
But even though he was pardoned
by Jerry Ford, Congress still could have investigated him. They still could have laid his crimes out to the public. And even though he wouldn't have gone to jail for it, he would have been convicted in the court of public opinion. And instead, Nixon died with a bit of an elder statesman rap attached to him. He was going around the world visiting other countries. He to some extent rehabilitated himself, in large part with the help of Diane Sawyer and a few others who helped him write his memoirs and get all that stuff out, in part with the help of Mr. Frost, the Frost-Nixon interviews, which, by the way, didn't end with Nixon breaking down and confessing. He did say when the president does it, that means it's not illegal. But the stuff at the very end, to the best of my knowledge, he did not say. But the bottom line is it could have come out and it should have come out. And the same thing again, the Democrats, the same thing. When Bill Clinton came into office, he didn't pardon, on his way out of office, Bush Sr. pardoned all the Watergate people, Cap Weinberger and all those others. And even though there were pardons, Bill Clinton could have said, we still need to investigate this. And even though the Congress, very quickly became virtually entirely Republican, he could have had the Justice Department do it. Even though there wasn't a crime that could be prosecuted, there can still be a crime investigated. And so that's my concern is, and that's why I think Bernie was probably very carefully using the word investigate. But there's also, and Eddie, thanks for bringing this up, the U.S. Congress and federal courts are also not the only jurisdiction that can hold a president of the United States, a vice president, or anybody in a federal administration to account, frankly, anybody in the United States, to account for war crimes. Look at Slobodan Milosevic. Look at Radovan Kedovich. They just nailed this guy. He was a psychiatrist, and then he became the one of the chief architects of the Serbian war crimes. Look at what happened with the Nazis. There's no shortage of venues around the world. Germany has the ability to hold our people guilty of war crimes. France has the ability. The International Court at The Hague. The United Nations, I believe, has some sort of power in this area, although I'm not sure that they have prosecutorial power. We're getting into an area that's outside my area of expertise. But the bottom line is that there's no shortage of venues in which these guys can be held accountable. And I think, frankly, they need to be held accountable. I think it's a very important thing. Commodore in Mount Vernon, Washington. Mount Vernon, Washington. Hey, Commodore, what's up?
Thank you, Tom. I'm a middle school social studies teacher, and I've been listening about the concerns of American citizens not understanding their Constitution or their civic responsibilities. I'd like to suggest to you that a visual that we've been using for over 200 years is partially responsible. If we take Lincoln's Gettysburg Address defining our government as of the people, by the people, for the people, and then we look at the contradiction in the 200-year-old picture where we put three boxes on a piece of paper, one is legislature, one's executive, and one is judicial, and we ask our students, where in this picture do you see yourself?
Wow.
Nobody raises their hand.
You're right. There needs to be a fourth box, which is above all of them, which is the first three words of the Constitution, we the people.
Yeah, we the people. So I've created a PowerPoint, and I teach workshops for other history teachers, which doesn't get rid of the old but incomplete picture. It simply adds that fourth box, calls it the people branch, using a definition that a branch of government is any functioning part of our government without which the other parts cannot function.
Yeah. Commodore, I'd add a fifth to that, which the founders talked about extensively and is the only private business that is written into the Constitution, the only type of business that is specifically named and protected in the Constitution of the United States, and that's the press, which is often referred to as the fourth estate, the fourth branch of government.
I see. Well, that's intriguing. My goal as a social studies teacher is to find some way of putting my students in the picture so they see themselves at an early age as being a responsible citizen as part of their functioning government.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with it, and I think that's brilliant.
Yeah.
That's well done.
And when you can show all the exact checks and balances that are reality,
mm-hmm.
Functioning between all four of those branches.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
very well said. Very well done. Commodore, thank you very much. I appreciate it. Mateo in New Mexico. Hey, Mateo.
Yeah, hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hey, this is perfect, following up on your last caller. I just wanted to let you know and see, kind of get your opinion on it. We've been building on the energy from the campaign here,
mm-hmm.
and we had a house meeting back on December 13th.
Uh-huh.
It was, prompted by the transition team.
These are followed by the Obama house parties. This is a sequel to that.
Yeah, exactly. And they actually initiated it. They emailed a lot of us that volunteered on the campaign, saying, "Hey, why don't you host a house party?"
That's great.
And I was blown away. I put this thing up on their website. That was the only advertising I did, and 36 people came here in little Española, New Mexico.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful.
And from that, we've spun off. Now we're having another one this coming Saturday. We're doing a big inauguration event.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been an activist for many years. And we live within line of sight of Los Alamos National Labs, And so we have a lot of nuclear issues and that here. But I'm so stoked at what's going on here, and I just kind of want to let you know about it.
That is great. Mateo, thank you very much, and good on you. Congratulations. You're doing well. I'm very pleased to hear it.
There's others all over the country at mybarackobama.com.
Mybarackobama.com. Yep, and change.gov as well. Thank you, Mateo. Got to take a break.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Saving the Constitution. Tom Hartman, nationwide, weekdays 9 to noon, AM 620 KPOJ, Portland's only progressive talk station.
Hey, what if I told you that ultimately a large majority of American men will face prostate health-related issues? Would that make you think twice about how you can avoid becoming part of that statistic? This is a hint, guys. If you're not thinking about these kind of things, you should be. Every single man will have prostate problems if they live long enough. When you have an unhealthy prostate, you're making frequent nightly bathroom trips, you have difficulty going, and even sexual dysfunction. This is your body's way of telling you something's not right. You should visit your doctor for regular checkups and take Beta Prostate to provide you with all natural prostate support. I reached out to the manufacturer, and they'll be extending a special offer. Buy two bottles of Beta Prostate and get one free. You'll also get a free book written by the formulator of Beta Prostate, Roger Mason. And best of all, it's risk-free, so your satisfaction is guaranteed. Call today, 1-800-954-0803. 1-800-954-0803. That's Beta Prostate, available at 1-800-954-0803. That's 1-800-954-0803.
Are you waking up with Carl Wolfson and friends?
These are less popular suggestions. Abraham Lincoln.
6 to 9.
The Obama's first dog, what name it could be.
Promise, because he promised the girls and he promised us.
Elephant eater.
How about lipstick?
How about rogue?
You've got to have southpaw.
I'd like to give it a local name and name it Mutt
Safino, the weather dog.
It's Carl Wilson.
As Abraham Lincoln said.
Morning 6 to 9.
AM 620 KPOJ.
Portland's only progressive talk station.
I'm Tom Dwyer, 230-2300. I thought that Oregon got all its electricity from hydroelectric. Well, about 60% of our electricity is hydro, but the rest comes from dirty coal plants like those in nearby Boardman and Centralia. The Boardman plant, 150 miles east of Portland, generates 20% of PGE's power. It's the largest stationary source of greenhouse gases in Oregon, contributing to acid rain in the Gorge and on Mount Hood, and impacting us from Hell's Canyon to Mount Rainier. Please help me support the Bonneville Environmental Foundation in funding green power here and now with the Tom Dwyer Automotive Services Carbon Neutral Program. Use the link at tomdwyer.com, enter the promo code KPOJ, get a 50% discount, and join. Your car will be carbon neutral, you'll receive 10% off labor, and other offers that will save you over $350. If you're a current client or wanted to try us, then please check this out. I'm counting on you to help build the wind and solar power we need in Oregon today. I don't want to burn coal to power my house or my next car. Keeping our vehicles operating at their best. Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, 230-2300. And please visit tomdwyer.com.
Due to the nature of this event, selection varies by location and is limited to stock on hand. Everyone's been waiting for the New Year deals, waiting for final reductions on top name gear, waiting for blowout liquidation. Musicians, this weekend, it's Guitar Center's unprecedented clearance event. Manufacturers are offering unheard of discounts to clear inventory. Only Guitar Center has the retail footprint big enough to move the gear, and the savings go straight to you. You'll find hundreds of unprecedented clearance deals, like get a complete $1,000 Pro Tools recording pack for just $3.99. Simmons electronic drum kits now over 65% off list. Clearance deals are final. Quantities are limited, and when they're gone, they're gone. Get a Marshall combo, just $59. Buy a digital reference DRVX1 vocal mic, get three more free. Plus, now's the best time to use your Guitar Center gift card. Guitar Center's unprecedented clearance event. Don't miss it. Shop online at guitarcenter.com.
So you love listening to the radio. You love listening to it at work, in the car, in your home office, at the park, at the gym, on the train, with your girlfriend, with your boyfriend, at your kids' play. Okay, that's just wrong. But what's right is you can listen to radio on your iPhone wherever you go. All thanks to the iHeartRadio app. Download it for free at iHeartRadio.com. We think you'll heart it a lot.
Now back to Tom Hartman Nationwide on Portland's progressive talk station, AM 620 KPOJ.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them blue for me and you. To myself, what a wonderful world.
Hey, thanks so much to Louise Hartman, to our executive producer Sean Taylor, to Stephanie Whiteman, Shelley Osterberger, Marcus Hillman, and Michael McDonald at Air America, to Sue Nethercutt and the folks in our chat room. Hey guys, hi there. And to Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website. Mike, you've been doing this so well for so long. I'm so grateful. To our affiliates, our sponsors, thanks for keeping us alive and going. And to you, you're the one that this is really all about. Thank you to you for listening to our program. I am truly grateful for it. I'm grateful for so much. Every day I wake up, I say thank you for another day of life. I am really. And I'm grateful for Victoria Jones and the great folks of the Talk Radio News Service, who, by coincidence, is on the phone. Victoria Jones, talkradionews.com. Hey, Victoria.
Hey, Tom. Happy New Year.
Thank you, and Happy New Year to you, too.
Thank you very much.
You don't sound terribly hungover.
I'm as sober as a judge.
Okay.
Use an old-fashioned expression.
I was going to say, you know, given all the political Republican appointees that Bush has been putting into judgeships, and more than half of them from the Heritage Foundation, I'm not sure that phrase has much resonance anymore.
No, you could be right.
What's going on in the world?
Well, interestingly, in the White House briefing today, White House spokesperson Gordon Jandro was asked about the claim by Israeli Foreign Minister Zippy Livni that there is no humanitarian crisis in the Gaza Strip,
yeah.
Which, of course, many, many international organizations are saying there is a humanitarian crisis. And his reply was quite interesting. He said, we want to make sure there's no humanitarian crisis. The Israelis are reporting that Hamas hoards the humanitarian supplies and doesn't allow them to reach the people of Gaza to create the idea of a humanitarian crisis. I can't speak to the exact situation on the ground. So he's not saying one way or the other, but he would not say that there is a humanitarian crisis.
Hmm. Interesting.
So he would not go along with what just about every other organization in the world is saying, which is that there is a humanitarian crisis.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting statement.
I think to acknowledge it, they'd also have to acknowledge some culpability in it, because it's been brought about in large part by the blockade of Gaza over these 3 years now?
It's certainly been a while.
Yeah.
It's certainly been a while. Meantime, the weather has cleared up in Gaza, and the tanks and the Israeli troops are poised. Some people are saying that it looks possible that they could go in now that the weather's cleared up. Of course, that is speculation.
Yeah.
Coming back to here, the Minnesota recount, which I'm sure you've been following with, if not glee, with fascination, as all of us have. Senator
yeah.
John Cornyn of Texas has said again that, no, they will oppose seating Al Franken on a provisional basis.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, if Al Franken has not been certified as the senator, you know, there's a certain amount of sense to be made for that, just like there's a certain amount of sense to be made for if Blagojevich actually appoints, somebody, in this case Roland Burris, to be the senator, that he should be seated. I mean, I find myself, scratching my head about both these arguments. I think that they're both a little weak, frankly.
Well, I find myself asking the question, how can they stop? I mean, if I take off my reporter's hat for a moment and put on my thinking citizen's hat for a moment, how can they actually stop Burris from walking in?
Right. Well, they can physically stop anybody.
They can stop him physically.
They can say he's not a member of the Senate, but the Supreme Court back in '68, I think it was, in the Adam Clayton Powell case. This is the House of Representatives, not the Senate. And I know the Senate thinks that they've got a whole new set of rules, but the fact of the matter is that the Supreme Court said that if he's not a felon, if he's eligible for public office, if he's of adult age, I don't think you even have to be 35 to run for the House or Senate. That's just for the president. If you constitutionally qualify, then that body can't keep you out. And, that was a clear ruling by the Supreme Court back in the late 60s. And Blagojevich has not been indicted. He's been arrested, but he has not been indicted. He is not yet formally charged with a crime. So he is not even an alleged criminal, arguably, at this point, unless my facts are wrong. My understanding of the facts are wrong. And even if he were indicted, that does not diminish his powers as governor under the Constitution of the state of Illinois. He can still operate, I believe, as governor until he's impeached by the House and Senate, which could take months. And Barack Obama and I understand all the Democrats, they want everything to be nice and squeaky clean, but the reality is they need every vote they can get. You've got Republicans who are talking about they're going to filibuster everything that Obama does. And you got Harry Reid, the guy who, whenever the Republicans say filibuster, goes into a full swoon, just faints right on the floor, still running the Senate on the Democratic side. So, if they don't have enough votes to be able to overturn a filibuster so that the Republicans can't yell boo and watch Harry Reid have all the color drain out of his face, they're going to be in trouble.
No, I think you have it exactly right. Unless there's something actually wrong with the new senator himself. And there doesn't seem to be anything wrong with
him. No, he's a little eccentric. I mean, he's got a big monument to himself in the graveyard, but...
Which is a little odd, but you're allowed to be odd. Most senators are a little odd.
Yeah, I mean, if David Vitter can get seated, by the Republicans after he's been busted for soliciting a prostitute, which is an actual real crime, I don't see why a guy who... Well, anyway, what else is going on in the world?
What else is going on in the world? Well, those are two of the more interesting things that are going on in the world. Other than that, sounds like we're out of time.
Yeah. I'll see you at the inauguration, right?
Looking forward to it.
I am, too. I'll be there in Washington, D.C. for Washington Row, or for Radio Row there Monday through Thursday, and I look forward to seeing you, Victoria Jones, with the Talk Radio News Service. Thanks, Victoria.
Thank you.
Coming up Monday, Carrie Lucas, the Independent Women's Forum, Katrina Vandenhoevel, publisher of The Nation magazine, lots of news, and, of course, your calls and my thoughts on the day. So be with us. And don't forget, my friends, democracy, activism, the whole thing. America starts with you. Tag, you're it. Have a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.